May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable and pleasing in your sight, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Feel free to be seated. So you probably know that British people are not known for being particularly enthusiastic or effusive. For a while, for a number of years actually, we lived in America, first in New York and then in Charlottesville, Virginia. And the enthusiasm during very like everyday tasks was something I really had to get used to. So just as an example, like if I had been, I was a student in Virginia, so I'd been like up late reading or writing a paper, and then I'd go to a coffee shop to get a coffee in the morning, and the greeting would be so happy and enthusiastic. How are you today? What can I get for you? And it always took me a while to kind of get used to that level of enthusiasm. And anyone who's worked in the service industry, and I think this is true in Canada as well as the United States, can tell you that it's a very strangely enthusiastic setting. My husband, Robert, used to work for Booster Juice when he was younger. And he had to answer the phone when it rang and say, "It's a great day at Booster Juice." That's a true story. I don't think I could have done that job. I was also a server back in the day, both in the UK and in Canada. And what's required of you in those two countries in that setting is very different. So in Britain, your role is really like, you take the food, you remove plates, but really you stay quiet and kind of out of the way. And that's considered really polite because you're allowing the people just to get on with their meal. But when I had to learn to be a server in Canada, it was like a complete shift. So I needed to, you know, you go and introduce yourself, you say your name, maybe even write it on the table if you're clever at writing things upside down. And you want to be engaging and friendly and authentic. This is kind of expectation from the people who you're serving. And to me, that felt kind of uncomfortable because I couldn't relate to the enthusiasm. And I realized after a while that it's because I felt like it was inauthentic. But really, that was in my mind. That was a false assumption. I think most of the time in that setting, it actually is really authentic. I just wasn't used to that level of enthusiasm. Anyway, I was thinking all about this again this week, because as I was reading a gospel text, I found I was hitting a bit of a barrier and having a hard time relating to it and relating to Bartimaeus. And hopefully as we go forward, it'll make sense to you why. So Bartimaeus is sitting by the roadside, and he's doing what he did every day to survive. He was begging. Bartimaeus was a man who was blind in a time and a culture that made very little room for those who had differing abilities. And he begged, we can assume, because he didn't really have any other options. So this is how he sustained himself. It's how he made it from one day to the next. And Bartimaeus hears this large crowd coming, and he hears that in the crowd, Jesus is there. And he begins to shout out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Now this translation, "have mercy on me," doesn't fully convey the sentiment here, and the second reading of the gospel we heard caught this. Bartimaeus is not really asking Jesus to feel a certain way towards him, as the word mercy might suggest to our ears. Rather, his request is much more active and demanding. Bartimaeus is asking, shouting out for Jesus to do something for him. "Help me" might be an alternative translation. Bartimaeus is loud. He has to be heard. And he is confident. He knows who Jesus is. Notice how he calls him Son of David. This is the first time that this reference is used in Mark's gospel. And it's a notable precursor to the crowd that will greet Jesus in Jerusalem in the next chapter of Mark, who will cry, "Blessed is the coming kingdom of our father David." A recognition of Jesus' royal ancestry and the coming fulfillment of his royal calling. So Bartimaeus is a few steps ahead of that crowd that will greet Jesus when he enters Jerusalem. And if you think about it, he's several miles ahead of the crowd that surrounds him and that tries to silence him. Bartimaeus is loud and he is confident and he is insightful. He knows who Jesus is and he's demanding, "Help me." And the crowd around Jesus, those who are traveling with him, are embarrassed. Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, the text tells us. Just think about that for a minute. Here is this man calling out to Jesus, "Have mercy on me," and the crowd, the people who are already with Jesus and who are already following him, at least in the geographical sense, they tell him off and they try and silence him. In their lack of mercy, in their lack of goodwill, and their lack of the knowledge of who this Jesus is and what he is here to do, they attempt to keep this man from even encountering Jesus. Who really needs to be healed here? I met a young man this week who was struggling. He was struggling emotionally and mentally. He hadn't eaten all day, and he asked for some water. So I sat with him for a while and we talked, and as our conversation was winding up and I was about to return to my day, he said to me, "Do you know how to pray the rosary?" And I said, "Oh, I know what the rosary is, but I've never prayed it. It's not been part of my practice." And I felt so bad that I couldn't offer this small gift to him, like to help him learn how to pray the rosary. And then just as I'm about to stand up and leave, he pulls this very beautiful rosary out of his pocket. And he started explaining how to use it to me. You begin here with the Lord's Prayer, and then you say these other prayers on these beads, and then there's the gap, and we say another prayer there. And I was taken aback. I had made assumptions about him, and I had placed him on the outside. And all along, he was my brother, and he was teaching me about this beautiful practice of prayer. As we read this gospel, this good news, and when we hear about this crowd, I think it is with fear and trembling that we should seriously ask ourselves, who do we attempt to silence? Who do we assume is on the outside? Who do we attempt to keep from this real encounter with Jesus? And if Bartimaeus is several steps or miles ahead of these crowds, then he is surely a world apart from the disciples themselves. The text that immediately precedes this one in Mark's gospel is the one we heard last week, the one Steve preached on. So right before we hear about Bartimaeus' faith-filled encounter with Jesus, we hear about James and John saying to Jesus, "We want you to do whatever we ask, do for us whatever we ask." And in a parallel that surely is meant to draw our attention to the connection between these two events, Jesus says to James and John, "What do you want me to do for you?" The exact words that Jesus says to Bartimaeus. But unlike Bartimaeus, who, recognizing who Jesus is, puts himself at the total mercy of Jesus, unlike Bartimaeus, James and John respond, "Let one of us sit at your right hand and the other at your left in your glory." The disciples here show such a lack of sight, such an inability to see and know who Jesus is. They seek their own humanly shaped sense of glory, and they do not understand who Jesus is or what trial and suffering and loving sacrifice Jesus must face as he manifests God's true glory. Are they willing to follow Jesus along this way? I think it's notable here that the text tells us that when Bartimaeus is healed, he immediately follows Jesus along the road. Jesus is going to Jerusalem and to his death. This is the last healing in Mark's gospel, and it stands out because the person who is healed is not sent away or told to be silent. Who here is truly lacking sight? Who needs to be healed? Bartimaeus is not discouraged by the crowd that tries to silence him. In fact, the text tells us he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me, help me." And when Jesus tells the crowd to call him over, Bartimaeus throws off his cloak. Now, this is likely what he would have used to collect alms. So he's literally throwing away the thing that he uses to sustain himself. And this is before he is healed. And when Jesus asks Bartimaeus, "What do you want me to do for you?" Bartimaeus doesn't hesitate. "Rabbi, I want to see." "Your faith has healed you," Jesus tells him. And immediately he receives his sight and he follows Jesus along the road. I don't know about you, and perhaps it's the Brit in me, but I don't know that I can always relate to this kind of no holds barred faith. This loud, confident, no doubt in my mind that I will be healed kind of faith. And isn't it this interesting? How often do we read these stories of Jesus healing people, and we automatically think of the one who needs to be healed as exactly that, the one who needs to be healed, the person in need. We make them an outsider. They are the other than us, and they are the one that needs Christ. And perhaps, and I think even more troublingly, we might, without really thinking about it, connect the physical disability or sickness with a spiritual lack. There's a long history of this in our culture and in our church, and it's one we must learn to recognize and counter. And yet here in this account, Bartimaeus, the noisy, assertive, blind beggar, is not the needy other. He is the exemplar of faith to us. His faith is an example of how we should be like Bartimaeus, the Spirit might tell us as we hear this account. But how do we respond to this prompting if we're not able to relate to this level of enthusiasm, to the happy confidence that Bartimaeus shows in this encounter with Jesus of Nazareth? Does anyone else listen to too many true crime podcasts? So I was listening to one of these podcasts this week, and actually it's a very sad true story about a man who was falsely accused of murder. And after many, many months in jail, his case finally goes to trial. And despite a real lack of evidence that would suggest his guilt, his first trial ends with no real resolution. The jury are unable to reach a unanimous verdict. And it slowly dawns on this man that what at first appears to be a good result, because the man and his lawyers were seriously concerned that he would be unfairly convicted, it slowly dawns on him that because of a prior conviction, he will not be set free, and he won't be able to go home to his family, and that he will, in fact, be returning to jail for an indefinite amount of time while he awaits a retrial. And so, totally drained and heartbroken and despondent, he returns to his jail cell. And as he walks inside, a prison guard gives him a pencil and a piece of paper and tells him to draw a small dot on the paper with the pencil. And when he does so, the guard says to him, "That's all the faith you need." We don't have to be Bartimaeus to meet Jesus and to be healed by him. Faith too is a gift. And God can use even the smallest amount of faith, even faith the size of a mustard seed, and he can graciously and mercifully meet us in it and use it to heal us. Some more good news as we close. Let's turn back for a moment and remind ourselves how Jesus responds to the crowd that tried to silence Bartimaeus and keep him from Jesus. Interestingly, Jesus does not rebuke the crowd. He doesn't confront them. Jesus stops and says to the crowd, "Call him to me." Jesus invites them into a different way. He graciously invites them to play a part in Jesus' miraculous and loving encounter with this man of great faith. And they do. "On your feet," they say. "He's calling you." The crowd, those who showed such little faith and who actively tried to silence the faith of this man who refused to be silenced, are graciously invited into their own healing. And all of this before the healing of Bartimaeus even takes place. O God, make speed to save us. May it be so.